Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I'll tell you right now, it's going to be brutally cold here coming up. I mean, brutal. Stay in and enjoy a refreshing beverage. It's going to get down to 5 below 0. Are you kidding me?
It's like we're living in the tundra all of a sudden.
Wow.
That's what I felt like last night when the wind was blowing and I was watching the snow drift and almost whiteout driving out the driveway here at the studio.
Well, it must have been tough for your limo driver, but I'm sure he negotiated it well.
He did
want to
fine.
Thank you. Not surprised. At some point, you're going to have to find out exactly what the common man goes through. All right. Other people at the station get on you about your luxuries, your excesses?
No, I don't think anybody's aware.
I mean, you go up to for a game up north, Canton, Troy, whatever, helicopter.
Again, I don't even think I'm aware of these luxuries you keep referring to.
That's because it's so common to you, it's just part of your life. Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury.
I was thinking, how in the world can I set him up on this one? Wow, that would work well, didn't it? We've been doing this show Brewers. Too long. You're anticipating my thoughts now, and if I were you, I'd be frightened.
Well, it's easier than I thought. All right, so Sydney's at home. Beep. She wants to hit that buzzer. Beep. Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, soft drinks, snacks, best selection anywhere. And, of course, they roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day, and the pickle bar is second to none, all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. And on Fridays, we try to check in with Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Tony, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Always good to be with you guys on a Friday. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing well, Tony. Let's start with Le'Veon Bell. Sounds like they expect two games. In the end, is that about what this is going to be, considering the multiple offenses that he pleaded to?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's going to be two games. I think the Steelers would be thrilled if it was anything less than two games. I guess if you look at it, you know, they dealt with a four-game suspension to their quarterback a number of years ago. I think they went 3-1 during those four games, actually, and
right.
So they were able to survive that. But they need to find someone to carry the ball for those two games, because they didn't have somebody that could do that on the roster in the playoffs. And I'm not saying that was the reason they lost, but it sure would have been nice to have that weapon available to them then. But I think they'll deal with this and then move on from it. And if you're the Steelers, you got to keep your fingers crossed that this was a one-time mistake by Bell and not something that's going to be a problem. It doesn't look that way, but the margin for error all of a sudden disappears.
Now the next part. The Steelers end up statistically with the toughest schedule in the NFL next year. The Falcons end up statistically with the easiest schedule in the NFL. So just your thought when you saw that come out.
Well, I think, having covered this team over the past couple of years, the less bad teams they play, the better they seem to do. maybe this will get their attention, because they went 11-5 this year, Steve, and they had two losses that were absolutely inexplicable, to lose to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who won two games all year, and to lose to the New York Jets, who I think won four. And that's been a pattern for this team. So there's got to be something to it. Every now and then, okay, that's life in the NFL. But it's happened multiple times over the past 3 years. So they seem to get up for the big games, And they tend to play better. Even if they don't win those games, they tend to play better. So the other thing is you just never know from week to week and year to year in the NFL. You know, who would have thought that a game against the Saints last year is a game that looked like it should have been an easier game for the Steelers. It was a game they ended up losing. But you know, the Saints weren't what everybody thought they would be, and the Cardinals the last couple of years have been a pretty good team. So I guess you just never know.
All right, and of course, combine coming up, free agency coming up as well. You know, you're not going to get a winner in free agency. They know that. But how do you view the combine, Tony? In this world of analytics, what's important to you? 40-yard dash time, reps? What do you look for?
You know, I'm not big on all the numbers. I'm really not. And I think for a long time the Steelers weren't. Either, you know, I think the Steelers look for somebody who just jumped out to them as a football player, and then maybe, you know, all things being equal, you tended to maybe rank some guys higher because of a 40-yard dash time, or because of someone's, you know, agility, or because of how much somebody can lift, or whatever the case may be. But the last couple of years, you know, little guys with speed seem to be guys that they've been coveting. They haven't had success with them on the field either. But they, you know, continue to go back to that. So I don't know if there's been a little bit of a change, you know, with how the Steelers view the combine. You know, you look at a guy like Ryan Shazier, who really was a combine guy. He obviously can play football as well, but he's a guy who impresses in the combine. And you wonder if maybe he didn't climb the charts because of what he can do in a combine situation. So there may be a change of what the Steelers are looking at. I think they used to be football first, numbers second. But the numbers may be, you know, maybe gaining on them a little bit.
The Penguins last night, they picked up the extra point because they won in the shootout. But how stunned were you by how the third period played out last night?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they were playing. In fact, this may have been at least through the first two periods, the best back-to-back games the Penguins had played since early in the season, and a real nice win against Detroit, 4-1 the other night, and then 3-0 last night. You expect, you know, Ottawa to counter with a goal and break the shutout, but the fact that you know, and then Ottawa scores two to make it 3-2, and Sidney Crosby gets on the board to make it 4-2, and you think, okay. You know, they're going to win the game 4-2, that's that. And next thing you know, it's 4-4 in a span of, I think, 13 seconds. Ottawa scores two goals. That's a concern. You know, there's no question that that's a concern. This team historically have not been great closers. They've given up leads in the past. And, you know, the more that starts to happen, the more that creeps into their minds when you get into a third period situation. It creeps into the minds of the opposition, and it creeps into the minds of the Penguins, and that's something they haven't been able to shake. So, you know, happening once, I don't know that that's necessarily a huge issue, but it is, you know, it has been a trend, and that's the last thing they need is for that to continue to be a trend as the postseason approaches.
They have the Blackhawks coming up Sunday at 12:30. That's one of the fun games, I think, nationally, and a game I think that the NHL needs to have. What about the matchup? What do you look forward to in that one?
Well, you know, that's a great matchup. There's no question about it. You know, you're right. That is the kind of a game that that the league and the fans look forward to. And as much as the Penguins might downplay it, there's no question that when Sidney Crosby comes to the rink and looks across and sees Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane and these guys, that there's no question that a fire gets lit underneath him. And the same with Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang and Marc-Andre Fleury. These are the best, and you want to compete against the best. And I guarantee you, Toews and Kane and those guys feel exactly the same way. So, you know, we've been premature in calling these kind of matchups a potential Stanley Cup, you know, preview, because the Penguins haven't held their own in that department over the past 5 or 6 years. But still, at the end of the day, these are the kind of games that the Sidney Crosbys and the Malkins and those guys absolutely look forward to. And you can usually see a little bit of a hop underneath them when the game begins. And even early on, you know, before the game, those guys are a little bit more fired up. So that's a fun game for the fans, and I think it's just as fun for the players.
CBS Sportsnet did a piece on baseball and about teams that improved themselves in the offseason. And they labeled the Pirates as one of the two teams that improved themselves in the offseason with smart moves. Did I miss something?
I don't think they did anything that you know, jumps off the page. They didn't do anything necessarily with the starters on that team. But what I think they've done is they've given themselves a major league bench. And I think that that's maybe the biggest thing that they've done. You know, last year when you had an injury, all of a sudden you were looking at yourself in the ninth inning with two guys on base and Brent Morrell coming to the plate, or Michael Martinez coming to the plate, guys who were, you know, 091 lifetime hitters in the major leagues. You know, you get into extra innings and you simply don't have a legitimate major leaguer on the bench. And I think that they've gone a long way towards solving that problem. Now, all that said, they've got an old pitching staff. And they've got a lot of young guys in the farm system, Steve, but they're not quite ready yet, and they're going to need to get a year or two out of guys who are on the, you know, on the wrong side of 30. Even Charlie Morton is on the other side of 30 at this point, and you've got Liriano who's getting up there, and obviously A.J. Burnett. So they're going to depend on those guys, and I think that's a little bit of a risk. I think it can work out, but at the same time, would it surprise anybody if a 38-year-old A.J. Burnett simply couldn't get guys out anymore? It shouldn't. He's 38. So I think that is the big question mark. I like what they've done. I think they've solidified their bench and their depth.
Right.
But I think they are depending on some old guys to play like young guys.
I've heard mixed reviews about A.J. Burnett in the clubhouse. And, of course, he's now back. You've been around him. What, you know, how has he struck you? What have others said about him?
You know, I think that the idea that A.J. Burnett is going to help every young guy in the clubhouse is overblown, or that A.J. Burnett taught these guys how to compete. I think that's
right.
A little bit overblown.
I agree with that.
At the same time, I also think it's overblown that he's a negative influence. I think these guys know what A.J. Burnett is. And he likes to compete. He loves to compete. I think that does rub off a little bit. I don't think that's a bad thing. At times, you know, we're talking about a guy during a game 2 years ago who, during a after a defensive shift, stood on the mound. A base hit went through the shortstop hole where Clint Barmas would normally be if they hadn't shifted. Burnett turned around on the field and screamed at Clint Barmas. Now, Clint Barmas didn't decide on his own to go play, you know, on top of second base. That was the shift. And, you know, again, Clint Barmas is a veteran who doesn't deserve to be addressed like that, you know, on the field. If you have a problem with it, you say it in the clubhouse. But Burnett doesn't do that. Burnett does stuff whenever A.J. Burnett feels like doing things. But the other side to that is I think those players get it. They roll their eyes. And it's, you know, there's some of that A.J. being A.J. thing. And, you know, they just don't let it bother them. And then usually Burnett comes back 15 minutes later and apologizes. He just, you know, he doesn't have much of a filter, and I think the players understand that. And I think if there's a clubhouse he can come into where that won't be an issue, it's one where he's already been, and they've seen his act, and they understand it. And I don't think it really does that much one way or the other. I think it's just who A.J. is.
Give me a little feel right now for Pitt basketball and where they are.
Well, you know, they had a loss on the road at Louisville, number 9 team in the country the other night.
That's not embarrassing.
With 12 minutes left, Steve, they're up by 6 points. They're in really good shape. That loss in and of itself isn't going to be held against them, but time's running out to get those kind of wins. They need a signature win. They've got one against Notre Dame at home. They're a team whose back is against the wall trying to make the NCAAs. I just think it's probably not. I know the fans don't want to hear this, and certainly the players shouldn't believe this, but it's going to be very difficult because they just don't have the signature wins. And to be honest with you, Steve, any win this team gets, they have to work hard to get. There is no easy win for this team. Just as hard to beat a Notre Dame as it is for this team to, you know, to beat a Virginia Tech or a Wake Forest. So they've got 7 games left in the conference. 5-2 would get them to 21 wins. But even if they get there, Steve, I just don't know. Unless they win one of these next two against North Carolina or Virginia, I don't know that they're going to have the kind of wins that you need to make the tournament. And quite frankly, if they don't make the tournament, even if they have 21 wins, it's because they're not a tournament team. I just think it's that simple.
Is it the depth of competition in the ACC, the fact that the, you know, the recruiting cycle is where it is, combination of things? What is it right now?
I think it's a combination of those things. I do, you know, for some reason, Jamie Dixon has not been able to recruit a quality center right now, and that really hurts them. You know, he's had good centers in the past. They've missed on a couple of kids. You know, they've had some injuries. They've had centers that they recruited who were elsewhere playing and doing well. And that really stings when you can't find a guy at that position. So that's, I think, the biggest issue, because then that hurts them at other positions. They've got Mike Young playing out of position now because of that. They're a team that quite frankly, they do have some youth, and that does hurt them on occasion. But it's a couple of recruiting misses that have hurt Jamie Dixon. And I don't know if that's because of the switch to the ACC, and they've had some issues the last couple of years or what. But their roster is as challenged as it's been since Jamie Dixon's been the head coach.
As always, Tony, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Same with you, Steve. Thank you.
Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report.
Was there a name that's prominent to some Pittsburgh people that was missing in that report?
Ben Roethlisberger?
No.
Terry Bradshaw. That was what it was.
No, maybe. No, that's Josh Harris. We'll come back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com, proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Well, here's one for you. Kevin, of course, totally and completely enamored with social media. But you have to be careful with what you do with it. You have to be very careful with what you do with it. Social media is like anything else. If you use it well and use it right, it's a tremendous tool. Say, for example, there's an accident on 11 and 15 or whatever, or something happens on 80 and you want to get the word out quickly and people on Twitter see it and suddenly they avoid it and go someplace else. Great use of it. We let people know exactly what we have going on this show all the time. Hey, don't forget our guest coming up. Yesterday we sent out a tweet about Penn State's bowl money coming back, as an example. But that's the proper use of it. Now listen to this story. This was in the New York Times yesterday. John Ronson wrote this in the New York Times magazine. And I'll do it verbatim. As she made the long journey from New York to South Africa to visit family during the holidays in 2013, Justine Sacco, 30 years old and the senior director of corporate communications at IAC, began tweeting acerbic little jokes about the indignities of travel. There was one about a fellow on a flight from JFK. Weird German dude, you're in first class, it's 2014, get some deodorant. Then on her layover at Heathrow, chili, cucumber sandwiches, bad teeth, back in London. And on December 20th, before the final leg of her trip to Cape Town, going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS, just kidding, I'm white. She chuckled to herself and then pressed send on the last one, then wandered around Heathrow for about half an hour, sporadically checking her phone. No one replied. She only has 170 Twitter followers. 170, that's it. Boards the plane, 11-hour flight, slept. When the plane landed in Cape Town, was taxiing on the runway, she turned her phone back on. Right away, she got a text message from someone she hadn't spoken to since high school. I'm so sorry to see what's happening. Sacco looked baffled.
Then another text, you need to call me immediately. It was her best friend, Hannah. Then her phone exploded with more texts and alerts, and then it rang. It was Hannah. You're the number one worldwide trend on Twitter right now, she said. Sacco's Twitter feed had become a horror show. In light of Justine Sacco's disgusting racist tweet, I'm donating to CARE today. How did Justine Sacco get a PR job? Her level of racist ignorance belongs on Fox News. AIDS can affect anyone. I'm an IAC employee. I don't want Justine Sacco doing any communications on our behalf ever again, ever. Then one from her employer, the IAC corporate owner of the Daily Beast, OkCupid, and Vimeo. This is an outrageous, offensive comment. Employee in question, currently unreachable on international flight. The anger soon turned to excitement. All I want for Christmas is to see Justine Sacco's face when her plane lands and she checks her inbox voicemail. Justine Sacco is going to have the most painful phone turning on moment ever when her plane lands and so forth. Okay. Twitter can be fun if done right. But again, what you may think is sense of humor, if you offend somebody and you do it in this realm, you may only have 170 Twitter followers. It goes viral like that. Humor is very interesting. What you think is funny may offend somebody else. Before you hit the send button, really think twice. Or don't use it at all. I'm trying to think who that might be.
I don't know anybody.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome to the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. And, of course, this is Friday, brought to you by Brewers Outlet. Reagan Street in Sunbury. Imports, domestics, microbrews, and the best selection of beer in town, without question. I mentioned beer, yes. And, of course, on top of that, soft drinks, roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day, and the pickle bar is second to none. Kevin, you want to talk a little bit about the Big Ten thinking about freshman ineligibility? Let's get to that topic and much more now with Adam Rittenberg of ESPN.com. Adam's the one that broke the story yesterday about Penn State being allowed to get back into the bowl pool starting in 2015. Adam, welcome. Great to have you with us.
It's good to be with you, Steve.
Adam, give me a breakdown in terms of estimates. Normally, I think Penn State, when this first started, I think the estimate was it was going to be about $13.5 million over a four-year span. So that comes out to about $3.4 million a year. With the current college football playoff, what's that new number look like?
Right. Well, that's why in some ways it was important that this came down heading into this coming season. It would have been even better if it was heading into last season, because the average revenue share per team in the Big Ten went up substantially. It was $2.26 million per school in 2012, $2.75 million per school in 2013, and then it went up to $4.6 million. That's an estimate. It's not completely finalized, but that's what I was told from the conference for 2014. And then it's going to go up potentially to $6.6 million in 2015. So you can see the effect of the college football playoff and the access it provides and the money it's generating for everyone. Right there. So that's, you know, the total lost revenue for Penn State's, you know, somewhere in the $9.5 million range. But being able to get a full share again this year with the increase because of the playoff, you know, certainly will help Penn State.
Well, actually, what it does is it actually closes the gap. If you know, because you and I both know they do a lot of 5-year planning cycles at schools. Well, in a 5-year planning cycle, you would not have planned for this, and that actually, that closes the gap significantly as to what they thought they might lose on it.
Yeah, without a doubt. So, you know, again, you know, Penn State is an athletic department as large as it is, and all the projects that are, you know, being funded or hope to be funded, this will definitely help with that. And, you know, I know a lot of Penn State fans are wondering why this wasn't implemented earlier, but, you know, the Big Ten, you know, whether it was right or wrong, basically followed the NCAA's lead throughout this process. The NCAA did something, the Big Ten did something. The NCAA took away penalties, the Big Ten took away penalties. So it was very much a reactionary process from the Big Ten, you know, really since July 2012.
Who made the decisions on this? You know, the assumption is when you have the big name, the big guy, Jim Delaney, people think he makes all the decisions. No. In reality, was this a presidential decision all the way across the board, and he followed what they told him?
Correct. No, this is every decision. You know, Jim obviously has influence, but as far as, you know, initial sanctions, reduced sanctions, and now essentially removal of all sanctions, that comes from the president. That's the council of presidents and chancellors that meets a couple times a year, usually at Big Ten headquarters now outside of Chicago, and that came down on Wednesday this week from the president.
The recruiting area, Ohio State was right around 7, Penn State was 12 to 15, Michigan State was 21. We'll see how it plays out over the next 3 to 5 years, Adam. But how well, in your opinion, did the Big Ten do in its recruiting?
It's always one of those questions that we'll know better in a couple of years. But I think Ohio State and Penn State certainly should be commended for the jobs they did. I think Ohio State will have an even better recruiting class next year coming off of a national championship. You don't get a whole lot of a bump because so many players are already on board by the time you win a championship. But, yeah, I think Ohio State is in great shape with Urban Meyer. You know, and to Penn State's credit, they put this class together really in the weeks and months after James Franklin was hired along with his coaching staff and had so many of these guys committed early in the process and then added to that class late even when they lost a few players to other schools. So I think it's a really important class for Penn State as they, you know, move closer to being – you know, a fully having full depth on their roster. You know, they addressed the offensive line spot. It was really a solid group, and I really like what Michigan State did. I think this may be their best class under Mark D'Antonio. It certainly looks like the best class they've signed on the offensive side of the ball. You know, Michigan, as you know, is in a unique situation with a really small recruiting class to begin with, and they lost a lot of commits, you know, during the struggles and the coaching change, and so it was hard to really evaluate what Jim Harbaugh and his staff are going to do in the future. I think you can expect a lot better from Michigan. And I think Mike Riley did a decent job keeping things together at Nebraska. Paul Chryst lost a lot of recruits, but was able to add some at the end at Wisconsin. So, you know, a pretty good year overall for the Big Ten.
Let's talk staff for a moment. Bob Shoup stays at Penn State, which was big, obviously, for James Franklin. Stability means a lot to him. But the Stan Drayton situation at Ohio State, what conversation now has been struck up because of the timing of his departure to the Chicago Bears?
Well, the thing that I've noticed, Steve, and I'll get back to Drayton, is that there have been more moves after signing day this year than I can ever remember.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's a function of, you know, a lot of NFL teams had openings later, maybe, and were filling head coaching openings later, and then obviously that trickles down to the staff, or a lot of teams just waiting until after signing day to fill vacancies. Just this morning, Nebraska lost its secondary coach to North Carolina, you know, one of their top recruiters in the South, Charlton Warren, leaving for the Tar Heels. So that seems to be much more of a trend this year for whatever reason than we've seen before. As far as Drayton goes, you know, he did leave right after signing day to the Chicago Bears. It certainly affected some of their recruits, namely Mike Weber, who had been committed to Michigan and ended up signing with Ohio State largely because of Drayton. And he was clearly unhappy afterward. Now he seems to be okay with the situation in Columbus as they brought in Tony Alford from Notre Dame, who made a move late in the process, someone who he's familiar with in recruiting. So I think it all worked out okay for Mike Weber, at least right now. But I'm just stunned by how many of these coaches are making moves, you know, in now mid-February, maybe late February, as spring football is right around the corner.
Jim Delaney has always hinted at times about certain changes he'd like to see in intercollegiate athletics. He talked about when he played at North Carolina, quote, laundry money. Now we have full cost of attendance. That's going to happen. The Power Five did that. Have you heard anything about any inkling about freshman eligibility from the Big Ten?
Well, you know, Jim did bring this up, not directly, but as part of his address to Big Ten Media Day in 2013, he outlined a four-point plan and talked about the academic piece that, you know, we need to make sure players are academically ready when they come in the door and maybe need to take some measures if they're not. And that's certainly one of them, is to make freshmen, you know, ineligible and have them work on the transition from high school to college, especially from an academic standpoint. And there are a lot of rigorous academic schools in the Big Ten. So I haven't talked to Jim directly about what was reported today, and obviously other commissioners are interested in it, but I doubt he would be opposed to the idea or would certainly want to have some more discussion around it, because I know it's something that, you know, the Big Ten football coaches and athletic directors met this week, and I was told by both football coaches and ADs that a big theme of that meeting was, hey, this is college football, this isn't the NFL, and everything that we do and every topic we discuss in here has to be done with the best interest of the players, of the athletes in mind. So I would doubt there would be major opposition from the Big Ten on that particular topic.
Back to staff for a moment. Kirk Ferentz for years had stability in his staff. It was a lot like Michigan State, rarely changed. A lot like it was with Joe here at Penn State, rarely changed. He's had some changes of late. He also shuffled some parts on his staff this time. What were your thoughts on that?
You know, again, I think it's what you talked about initially, that Kirk was so used to having the stability, and this is a way to maintain stability in terms of keeping the same assistants on staff, but changing some of the responsibilities. You know, he hasn't been afraid to do this in the past. He moved 3 years ago, Reese Morgan from offensive line to defensive line, and he'd had great success with the offensive line at Iowa. Now he's coaching the defensive line, but you know, there was definitely demand from the fan base and from those around that program to do something after an incredibly disappointing season. I mean, you know, there's certain 7-6 seasons at Iowa you say, okay, that's a pretty good season. This was not a good 7-6 season. This was a team that had everything lined up perfectly to reach the Big Ten championship game and have a resurgent season to say, hey, Iowa's a player in this conference again. And they fell flat on their face, especially in the bowl game. So this is a very bad season in my mind, and he had to do something. And rather than firing coaches, and I heard that was possible after the season, even in as recent as late January, he decided to keep everyone on staff and change some responsibilities, including adding run game coordinator to the title of his son Brian, the offensive line coach. So we'll see if it works. I tend to think you have to have sometimes a little bit more drastic measures after a season like that, but as you mentioned, that's not Kirk's style given his history of continuity on his staff.
Everyone has had their television contracts fall into place in college sports, and outside of it, everyone's had their contracts fall into place. NFL, NBA, and the Premier League in soccer this week with a huge deal that covers 3 years. The only one left out there is the Big Ten. Adam, what's the timetable on this in terms for the Big Ten in its negotiations, and how closely does Jim Delaney watch, for example, the performance of the Big East on Fox Sports 1 as an example and things like that?
Jim has told me many times, and I don't know if you've ever asked him about this, you know, I ask him, how often do you think about the upcoming television deal? And his standard answer is every single day.
Yeah.
So he is monitoring everything that you said. Whether it's in college football with other conferences or in pro sports, you know, certainly the landscape with the future of cable and how things are going to go. You know, is Google getting in the mix? You know, there's all these different variables out there. But I do think the Big Ten is in a very advantageous position, you know, right at the end of this cycle, this historic cycle of these mega deals. You know, there's 2 more years left on the contract, so there could be, you know, some initial negotiations at some point this calendar year, maybe in the summertime, but certainly heating up more into next year as the Big Ten gets ready to finalize what I think will be Jim's last major move as the commissioner of this conference. And he's had a historic run, something that I don't think we'll ever see again in college sports, to be at the head of a conference like this for as long as he has. So I know he thinks about it a lot. It's coming up. It's going to be fascinating because the dynamics of these deals seems to be changing every single month, it seems like. So very interested to see how this all shakes out, and I know he is too.
Yeah, and one final question, and it deals in some ways with that. Penn State, he always talked about being the bridge to Maryland, the bridge to Rutgers. All right, they've been in now officially since July 1st last summer. They've had a football season. Now we're in a basketball season as well. Have you had the sense from him and from the conference that this has worked out in terms of getting the footprint to the East Coast the way they hoped it would?
I think they're optimistic. I think they were pleased with the first season and some of the events that happened, you know, the performance of Maryland and Rutgers, both going to bowl games, and the way that the league was received with some of the some of the events it had on the East Coast, and as you know, there's other events coming up with the basketball tournament, and you know, who knows, maybe we'll see a Big Ten football championship game someday being played on the East Coast. There's no immediate plans to do so right now, but I think it'll be interesting to evaluate it after the entire basketball season is complete. You know, Maryland obviously is having a good year and will be part of the NCAA tournament, barring a collapse here at the end. And you know, there is obviously you know, looking at the recruiting landscape, you know, it does seem like, you know, more Big Ten teams are having some involvement with athletes in the D.C. area and in the area around Rutgers. So I think that's, I know it's definitely benefited those two schools, and I think it'll be interesting to see how the league ultimately views this first athletic year of having those two teams as members.
Actually, I lied to you about being the last question. You were talking earlier, something I had to follow up on. I know how it's perceived here. And look, there are two schools that are in the same, quote, neighborhood as Penn State. What is the perception you get from other coaches and athletic directors in the middle part of this conference as to how they look at the two of them in there?
Well, you know, I think anytime there's change, there's, you know, there's a little bit of trepidation. I know regarding, for instance, the Big Ten championship game, there wasn't any real desire among ADs, coaches that I talked to, other folks, to move that game out of the Midwest. I know Mark Hollis from Michigan State has been, I think, wise in how he's commented about it, that, you know, we obviously welcome Maryland and Rutgers, but you can't forget what this conference was in the history of where it's been. So I think everyone in the league understands why the moves were made. And interested to see what happens in the future, but I think it's been kind of a wait and see approach around much of the conference, and you know, it's clearly been beneficial for those two. But I think, you know, in the long run, we'll see if it's been beneficial for the Big Ten.
All right, hey, thanks so much, Adam. Appreciate the time very much. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks, Steve.
Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the Pickle Bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Final thoughts for the week, Sir Her of Kevin?
I'm just getting ready for the season finale of high school basketball tonight before the playoffs. So I have no thoughts. Mine are all about statistics and numbers.
What is the playoff setup for them since this is the finale?
Right now, it looks as if they'll actually have the seeding meeting over the weekend, but it looks like Shikellamy will be a 5 seed, which, based on the numbers that we've been putting together, would probably make them travel to Shamokin in the opening round.
Okay.
But all again, right. All that will officially be decided later in the weekend, and also figure out who fills out the final, it'll be about 3 spots for teams that did not get to the 500 mark. So there'll be, call them 3 at-large bids.
Very nice. Well done.
But an interesting game tonight, because you have Danville that's played a couple of games already this week and have played very, very well, handled Shamokin really well in the second half. Phil Stem's averaging 20 points a game in this week. Shane Riley in double figures, just under 20 points a game this week against Hughesville and also against Shamokin. So it is a big game, even though it's not a league game anymore. It's a big entertaining game, and it's been a big rivalry over the last couple of years.
Stay tuned for the after show. Kevin's going to have a complete rundown of the IndyCar season. That's all on the after show.
We may have to start one of those on WKOK.com.
Again, that's on the after show.
Where can you find the after show, Steve?
Today's show has been brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sudbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, stock up for the weekend now. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sudbury, the beverage supermarket. From the Sudbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sudbury, Sudbury Motors Can. Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Steve Jones for Kevin Herr. Have a great weekend, everyone.